Performance Slam podcast. I'm Andrew McGregor, and with each installation in this podcast, we're going to explore the world of spirituality, what it means to be alive, and how is it that we can bring our spiritual selves, tarot, meditation, religious or spiritual practices, into our daily lives. Please check out all of our episodes at thehermitslamp.com/podcasts, or you can search The Hermit's Lamp in podcasts on iTunes and download them all directly that way. If you are looking for card-by-card instruction on reading the tarot, please consider checking out James Wells and my new audio project, The Trumps Card-by-Card, where we dig in deep to one of the major cards and explore it thoroughly. If that sounds exactly like what you're looking for and gets your tarot juices all fired up, you can certainly also find that at thehermitslamp.com/podcasts. So before we get to today's podcast, I do want to mention that although there's nothing explicit in terms of language or any other kind of particular descriptive things, this conversation does eventually make its way around to discussing the Oedipal complex and some of those psychological ideas, and some of that conversation might be off-putting or potentially, I guess, even disturbing to people. So if this is a trigger area for you, or if this is something that you're not interested in listening to, hey, this is your heads up. Please jump ship now. Please use your discretion and discernment as to whether or not this might be for you. So welcome to the next installation of the Hermit's Lamp podcast. I'm here today with Christoph Carozza, and we're going to talk about tarot, and we're definitely going to talk about magic and psychomagic and some of these sort of experimental and interesting ways in which we can push our consciousness through actions in the world and things like that. So for people who've never encountered you before, Christoph, maybe you could give me a quick introduction about who you are and what you're up to.
I'm 47, something like that. I live in currently for about 2 months in Chile. I was born in France, and my tarot way was to encounter tarot when I was 12. I stole a tarot deck. I'm ashamed of it, but I stole a tarot deck in a shop. I was absolutely fascinated. I was in a vacation camp, and it was the end, and I was absolutely fascinated by a papoose. Bohemian tarot deck, and I had to have it, and I had no money, so I stole it. But the good thing is, like, that's a psychomagical action. It's 22 years after stealing it. I went to the same shop, to the same town, and I brought back a new one in the shop in order to, like, to repair the first action. That's an example.
Did you just slip it on the shelf, or did you tell them? Or
no, I didn't. I didn't tell them. It was like, I remember I went there by train. It's I was living in Paris, and the town is 800 kilometers from Paris. I took a night train. I arrived there at 9. The shop was opening at 9:30. I went to the shop. I entered the shop when it was entered. I just put the deck on the shelf, and then I went. And I took a train back to Paris an hour afterwards, and that was it. And that was it.
I love it. That's great.
And there's some symbols now here, and it's something I discovered quite recently. In fact, I made it was like a puzzle, and somehow 22 years after stealing the deck, which is quite symbolic for tarot readers. And also that this town I was talking about, his name is a French town in south of France named Sète, and which is Sète in the well-known for the Crowley admirers and this kind of stuff, but also it's number 7 in French. It's the same sound. And my name is Carrozza. In Italian, it's the chariot somehow. So it's the arcana number 7. So it's quite strange to see how these things are resonating on some unconscious levels.
Well, it's like you set something in motion, and the ripples of it continue to flow forward, right?
Yeah, but that was like absolutely unconscious. That was these actions we do without knowing why we do them. Now I'm more used to it, so I let the thing go. But at this time, I was absolutely different. I was somebody else with another level of consciousness. I was an adolescent, quite lost, etc. But that was the some kind of hidden path in my life. And now I'm walking on some path, like letting my unconscious express itself. But that was after working on it and being aware that we are about 90% unconscious and 10% conscious. We pretend we, like human beings, normal ones, we pretend to control our reality with 10% of our brain, which is quite stupid to my opinion. So we need to find some other ways to enter and to dance with the 90 other percent, which are what we call reality. It's what I learned and what I see in motion when I work with tarot or workshops or this kind of stuff, you know, even in my life, naturally, because all of this was set in motion because I wanted to change. When 20, 22, 23 years ago, I entered a conference of Jodorowsky, there was some kind of meeting, unconscious meeting again, and I really needed to change something in my life at this time.
Did you know who he was when you went there? Like, were you aware of his work?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I had no idea who he was. A friend of mine, a Greek friend, and her name is something like, has to do with like a light or lamp or this kind of stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And she told me, yeah, you look depressed. Let's go to a conference. It's you pay what you can, and there's this guy, and he's quite old. He's very interesting, etc. And then years after, I got conscious that, for example, I saw a movie, one of his movies when I was a kid, a movie named Tusk, and I was absolutely marked by this movie also. It's a movie about elephant. It's not the best one he ever made, but it's quite good. It's very different in it. And I entered the conference, and he was talking about my name, Christoph. I mean, every week we went to the conference. It was like our math, you know. It was really some kind of meeting we had with him. Mm-hmm. And two things: he talked about tarot, and from the day I encountered the Papus deck, I didn't understood anything about it. But from this day, I had this thing in my life. And for the first time, I heard somebody talking about tarot and giving some information about it. And the other thing is that he was talking about my name. All these Christic charged names and the impact of this in the unconscious mind of Catholic raised or Catholic culture, cultured country people. Mm-hmm. And he was saying that it's quite dramatic, but that the belief in the literally in the Bible as a true story has made more death than all the world wars together.
Right.
Because unconsciously, it's my case, you know. I'm not dead, but I was. I left a life when I was 33. But then I was already in a change movement. But my mother has Mary as a name, and my father has a name quite similar to Joseph. So we were absolute Christic family, and I was like bound to die at 33. That's the neurotic unconscious path.
Mm-hmm.
All of this is funny, it's philosophical, it's nice, etc. But it has an absolute, like, concrete application on the life of everybody. And the first person I was working with was me, naturally.
Of course. So, when I hear your story, I think that you were born to die so that you could live. You know, absolutely. Because here you are, right? You know, inverting the consciousness spectrum. That is handing more control to the, or more, looking for more guidance from the unconscious and, you know, sort of turning that 90-10% on its head and all these things. What happens when people don't make that change?
I mean, it's what people currently call destiny. If you read Jung, he's talking about destiny. Destiny is the blind reproduction of some mechanics of the unconscious mind, like you follow the path of the family. Hmm. But it's quite the unconscious mind, when not educated, when you're not conscious of it, when not conscious of the impulses within, it reproduces. It's a machine quite powerful that reproduces mechanisms. And these mechanisms are leading you to some unwanted path somehow. I don't say that we don't reproduce afterwards, but if you reproduce something with consciousness, you can change your point of view on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now we enter in what we call like psychogenealogy. It's this kind of a transgenerational diagnostic therapy. It's not a real therapy. It's just being aware of what you're carrying with you.
Sure.
When you've a person sits in front of me, I don't have one person. I have about 14-15 persons in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
The person plus like a minimum 14 ancestors.
Right.
Parents, grandparents, great grandparents. And all these are living to the edge of conscious and unconscious.
Yeah, it's fascinating how much people reenact the history of their family, the history of their their people, their cultures, their backgrounds, you know. I mean, never mind past lives, right? Like, how about just straight up linear genealogy, right? You know, there it is, flowing straightforward and informing the present all the time, right?
During a time, I was absolutely not interested in past life. I was interested, but I was like forcing myself not to look at it until I was like knowing my genealogical tree better. And then when I was ready, the thing appeared in my life. Like I had an encounter with a person. I was working with Reiki, and my Reiki master, and she told me that that she knew a person, and we made this kind of, oh, it's Canadian, it's very nice. It's named Spiritual Hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great. I made two sessions. They were incredible. And I discovered that, that something about my past life, but I was like aware of my real life here. My concrete life, my inheritance and this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave me some kind of, relativity, different point of view of my life here. And I needed it, you know. But the tree is absolutely, I mean, knowing where you're coming from is very important because you're reproducing it.
Sure.
There's a book that will be, it's translated in English now. It's the book of Jodorowsky and Myron Costa. It's named Metagenealogy. Mm-hmm. It's quite interesting because Jodorowsky was furthermore than being a tarot student during I think like 60 years something, and he was one of the pioneers of this psychogenealogy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
It's interesting to me. I mean. So when people come to see you, right?
Yeah.
Are they coming to you to explore these things? Are they coming to you and saying, oh, I want to know if my boyfriend's going to come back? Or, oh, when am I going to get a job? You know?
Any kind of stuff. But if your boyfriend, if you want to know if your boyfriend or when your boyfriend will come back, I mean, you have to know why he went.
Mm-hmm.
What is the script you're acting when you're doing what you do with your boyfriend, and who is your boyfriend finally? Then you will discover that maybe your boyfriend is some kind of a projection of your mom, your dad, your grandfather, your great grandfather. You don't know. It's really funny to discover that we project reality. were like blind people saying to another blind person, "Oh, I love you. I so much love you, and I want to spend my life with you." And you don't know who you have in front of you.
Sure.
I mean, you say, "I love you." Do I really know who I is? Do I really know? I mean, I've been doing classical psychotherapy years ago, 5 years. And the first thing I discovered that we're full of sub-personalities. We have many. So when I speak, who is I? Is it the I that has some problems of waking up and that absolutely needs a coffee to act? Or the I that is angry because he's in the traffic? All this kind of stuff. It's different personalities. We're full of different personalities.
Sure.
When you say, "Hey, who's talking?"
Looking at the other person, which of their personalities are you loving? Or are you even aware of, right? Perhaps you're loving their great-grandparent, right? Or perhaps you're loving some aspect that's not even a major part of their consciousness.
Absolutely. But the thing is we need to have this mirror in front of us. But we have to know that it's a mirror. That the couple is not an achievement. Yeah, in an adolescent, a teenage conscious level, it is an achievement that, I'm in a couple, I have a family, and we have a dog and kids and house, and here we are. But it's a work, it's absolute work on yourself, if you want to accept it. It's an opportunity to evolve. I mean, here we enter another point of view about what life is. What is life? I was walking, I was thinking before the workshop I did, I was moving my hand and I was saying, who is making it move? What's the thing? What is coming from this movement? Yeah, I have muscles, bones, tendons, this kind of stuff. But what is what's the energy making it move? What's coming from? I mean, how do I breathe? Yeah, you say, okay, I have lungs, etc. But what's the energy making me breathe? I mean, it's some people call it God or energy or universe or whatever, but it's we're not like mastering the whole thing. It's working. That's the thing. So why are you here? Are you here to have a big bank account and a big house and this? Yeah, it's good because because material energy is good and you but focusing on it what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
I think we're here to have experience. And as a tarot reader, I mean, when I look at the arcanas, there's a way here to encounter your soul, to connect yourself to your soul and this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And
maybe so, it's a point of view.
maybe today, maybe next week we'll do something different.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's fascinating to me, you know, the way in which the tarot becomes this sort of revelation of ourselves to ourselves. At least, you know, I hear that in your story, that it's part of this journey for you. And, you know, for me, I was a year behind you, but, you know, I got my first tarot deck when I was 13. I didn't steal it. My grandmother bought it for me, you know, and, you know, and all of those things define a different flow and a different experience. But at the same time, it's definitely that thing of what are these cards and what do they mean and how do I work with them? And what's the, you know, that sense of the magic in them, right? At least for me,
yeah.
You know, that power, I was compelled to them. I needed them. I would have probably stolen them if I hadn't been bought them, you know?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Your grandmom was reading, your grandmother was reading tarot?
No. She was just very supportive.
Yeah, she was. She wanted to, but she was not allowed to.
Well, in my family, everybody has dreams that see the future to sometime, like not all the time, but sometimes. Everybody had, you know, on both sides, everybody grew up with these experiences. And so when I came around as the person who wanted to exteriorize this and make it a way of being, you know, it just there was no resistance on my behalf. The best thing that my parents did was, I think, was they raised me with no religion, other than just respecting people, and so I had no know, conflicts in those ways. You know, obviously other things, right? But for me, it was just always this thing of fascination and going deeper and deeper. And so all around the same time, I discovered tarot. The Mythic Tarot had just come out, and that was the deck that I got. I discovered Crowley, and I started reading his books, even though I had no idea what he was talking about. I kept reading them. They compelled me to read them again and again and again, you know? And eventually I started to make some semblance of sense of them, so.
That's very interesting, because it's one thing I was talking about. I was doing a workshop on psychogenealogy, and you have this sentence of Jung. I don't remember it like exactly, but the meaning of it is like when we feel bad, or we feel not at ease or depressed, or there's a light force in our unconscious mind that makes us look for something, some tool to feel better.
Mm.
And I was, okay, that's good. I know that. But the thing is that when this force lives in each and every human being, so if you take your family, for example, all of them very sensitive, very intuitive, but there's some kind of like, maybe it's a mistake, but there's some kind of like interdiction or impossibility to take it out.
Mm.
And then you arrive, and you are one step further, and you do it, and then naturally everybody supports it, because everybody has this like you come here. It's like it's very strange. It's like in the cut of the tower, you mm-hmm. know. You have this ray of light coming, and when you look at the lightning. The lightning are attracted on Earth by a little lightning also. Earth is projecting some kind of electricity, and then it attracts the lightning here. And like if the family needs somebody and like calls unconsciously for somebody to incarnate himself or herself in the family to go one step further.
Mm.
And that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's kind of we start to get nonlinear, right? We start to step off of this sort of sense of things, you know. I mean, my possibility required them to be open to it, potentially, and their need for me to come and show them and give them permission was required to liberate them further. So it becomes this sort of dance of circularness, which is fascinating.
Absolutely, absolutely, and the thing is that you're. You doing what you do is that you send energy in your past,
mm-hmm.
in your ancestors, and it frees them, some it liberates them somehow, and that's very interesting in this kind of energy. It's very nice that we're living in this time. I mean, there's a very strong if we look at the global human race, the people incarnating themselves. I see my daughter; she's six, and how strong they are intuitive, and are connected they are. If we accept that it's possible, and that they go one step further, I mean, I was working clearly in psychotherapy because my parents are like the worst consultant you can ever imagine. Like, I mean, yeah, I chose them because they are really, really, really difficult. I mean, they don't say nothing. They lie. They forget what they say. It's terrible, but it's very good consultant. It's like a great work to work with them. It's they put on your way an obstacle for you to step over it and to do better. It's I mean, I was looking for some kind of meaning to my life. That was the point.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that now I know there is no meaning to life, just to live it. I mean, meaning it's like looking with your head in something that is far bigger than your head.
Mm-hmm.
For example.
Well, I love your attitude that you're willing to engage the challenging client, you know, or the challenging people in your life in that way. You know, it's great to see that. It's certainly something that I know personally I don't find easy, and I think that many people certainly, you know, shy away from, right? So
Yeah, that's the thing. Maybe I discovered it in martial arts. I studied Japanese karate for a few years. And then I went into more Chinese tradition. And the Chinese are very, very practical. And in lots of Chinese stories, and they say that there is an opportunity in each difficulty we have. And that's the being wise, the wisdom is to look for it. And I was, I don't say it's easy, because incarnation is not easy. If you don't, if you look for something easy in incarnation, to my opinion, it's a waste of time. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't incarnate yourself to go on vacation all the time. I mean, it's no use, no use. You don't need to incarnate yourself. It's some kind of an experience, and this experience implies some kind of difficulties, obstacles, and this kind of stuff. And your way to deal with these obstacles is quite important, because it's what we call life somehow.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we see that in the progression of the Trumps, right? You know, I mean, it starts out like an easy summer day, maybe, depending on the fool card you're looking at, right? And then down the road you go, and next thing you know, problems.
And then you enter the high priestess, and then now you know you have to deal with these contraction expansion force all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's the movement of the universe, you know. It's like the spiral, you know. You have the Fibonacci spiral,
yeah,
and our galaxy is a spiral, and you have spirals everywhere, and this kind of and this is like finding some global movements. But the whole challenge is not forgetting all your beautiful ideas when you're in the bottom of the hole.
Exactly.
That's the old thing, you know. That's being wise, yeah. Because it's a thing, you know. And trying to pass on this way of working with your life, which is love. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's Einstein was saying that the energy that makes the world coherent is love.
Right.
The universe coherent. So okay.
Well, that's it. It all comes back to that. What did Carly say? We come divided for love's sake, for that chance of union.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's the idea. I don't really know deeply Crowley, because it was quite. It's traduced in French recently. I saw a book, I think it's better to read the books in your mother's language. My level in English is not that good to understand completely the thing, but. I think that all traditions, good ones, lead you to the same aim somehow.
Yeah, and I think that you know, lots of traditions too. They fool you, right? You start out and you think they're going to be about one thing, and then you kind of get deeper and you realize how much they're like so many other traditions. You know, when I was I was very, very into Crowley's work for a long time, and you know, participated in his, I mean, not obviously he was dead, but in his groups that he started and ran and those things. And, you know, it was kind of amazing how many Catholics, ex-Catholics, were there, because they loved Crowley's public persona of rebel and devil and rogue and all of these things. And yet, once you get through some of the outer material and start to connect with what's going on with him, you know, he's basically as Christian as the next Christian mystic, you know, and there's no separation there. But the outward show is so important to drawing people towards something.
Absolutely, that's the thing. But it's absolutely said in the Bible. I mean, my name is absolutely Christic. I left it aside, and now for Richard, which is a play on words like rich art. So it's like rich from his heart and rich by his heart, you know.
Uh-huh.
And that was the possibility we have to change our perception of reality. I studied a lot psychomagic. Psychomagic is a name invented by Jodorowsky. It's like a compilation of or concentration of many different influences, including theater, shamanism, magic, and through he discovered that that's absolutely the whole genius in it. He discovered that the unconscious mind understands symbols and that if you play the symbols physically, it's absolute magic. If you play the symbol physically, it has some impact on the unconscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that the problem we have is that some energy is cannot circulate fluidly in the unconscious mind. And that's the problem. And that's what creates, from the unconscious mind, problem of fluidity. It creates a problem in your conscious mind. Yeah. So if you add something to make it more fluid, it somehow it has an impact on your life.
Well, and I think that it immediately makes things better to do something symbolic in those ways, because most of the time, especially in kind of contemporary society, people think that their mind, that part of them, is what's in control, right? People think that that is the one steering the ship, and they think that they can, you know, in a rational way, talk to these unconscious parts and bring them into alignment, you know, like naughty children. And yet the unconscious mind, it will accept language, at least in my experience, but it'll accept symbols way better and faster. And the language itself might just peter to nothing anyway.
Absolutely. But that's the old study, you know. It's like, for example, the unconscious mind doesn't understand negation. You have many examples of it. I love them. For example, you go to your dentist and your dentist says, this won't hurt. And you're sure that this, what he's doing, is really going to hurt you. You know, it's like that, of when a person comes to see you and say, I don't want to bother you. Mm-hmm. And you can be sure that this person will really bother, this kind of stuff, you know. And for example, in the Catholic thing, because I for a time I rejected my Christic name. I rejected it. I rejected the symbol it meant on a very strictly Catholic interpretation of the Bible, like the sacrifice of the Christ, etc. And then, after 10 years, a cycle, I decided to get it back in some kind of alchemical movement to change my point of view on it and to make it a strength instead of rejecting it. And it has been working. I've had some informations, some intuitions on the Bible, on this incredible character avatar that was a Christ, and that's something incredible. And I'm now living in a very Catholic country and in a very Catholic continent, and it's quite useful to spread some ideas of the symbols of the Bible,
mm-hmm.
because the Bible definitely has not to be interpreted as literal story. It doesn't work like that. It's impossible. I don't think that there was a woman that was a virgin that gave life to the Christ. It's impossible. Physically, it's impossible. It has no meaning. It's bullshit. I'm sorry to say that. But
it has lots of meaning, but not any truth.
Not this one. Not this one. I mean, it's connected to nature, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The Virgin Mary is a very powerful archetype in this, but it also connected to the other Mary of the story, Maria Magdalena, and they are the same person somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And to see that you have the neurotic part of the Bible and the more lightful part of the Bible. And it's quite interesting to find like the lightful meaning of it. And that was very interesting what you said about Crowley. I didn't know, but there's a very strong imprint of Christianity in our society. But also, if you know it and if you dig inside it, then you will find the more pagan tradition behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Also very interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was, his dad was a pastor.
Right? Yeah.
You know, and supposedly by the age of 5 or 6, he had memorized the Bible, you know, was able to recite it from start to finish, right? Well, whether literally true or not, but, you know, it's, I mean, how could he escape being formed and shaped by that, if that was his environment, right? And as you say, going back however many generations, he carried with him, right? So.
Yeah, but he changed it. He found some meaning inside it and some symbols inside it, and then working with it was, you have very, very few people that have a deep symbolic knowledge, understanding of the Bible.
Hmm.
And I think it's a good work to seek in it some truth,
mm-hmm.
some lightful truth inside it. I'm talking a lot about life, but light, but like, yeah, but you need to explore the darkest of the cave to go towards light. It's that's the idea, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I know that in the tarot it's evident that in the Marseille you have the devil, and afterwards you have this card named the House of God. So if you know your devil, then you can connect yourself to your God. That's the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And the devil is an absolute servant of God.
Right. Well, it's all contained, right?
If God is
all, then it's all contained within that unity.
Absolutely. It's absolutely evident that was the first revelation I had. The serpent, the snake, is a divine creature.
Mm-hmm.
There's no separation. I mean, God is not fool. He knows that the snake is going. And there's many symbols inside it. You know, I'm interested in this. It's like changing the story. And changing the history from this, I think it's very exciting to discover the world, like Krishnamurti says, with new eyes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Changing the symbols enable you to change what you live and to change what you see.
Well, and you know, I mean, so I have two kids as well. I have two girls, 5 and 7. So we're experiencing similar age ranges, right?
Yeah.
And it's always impressive to me how quickly and fluidly they can change what's going on. You know, like they just like, oh, well, now we're doing this. Now we're doing that. Now you're the mom. No, now you're the dad. Now you're the monster.
Yeah.
Now you're the, you know, whatever, yeah. Anything, right?
That's the unconscious mind in action.
Mm-hmm.
In action, the kids are connected to the unconscious mind. Absolutely. I mean that's what Castaneda says in his books, that if you're aware that we're closing what we call reality on the mind of the kid when the kid is six, that a tree is a tree, yeah, but no, the tree is maybe the house of some creatures or some energy and this kind of stuff. So letting the like the imagination work and some of this thing undefined,
mm-hmm.
undefined, closing it like the reality is the reality. That was something I never could stand. Never in my family. Never.
Yeah.
That was something that's very good, because there was a huge obstacle to go over. Yeah, I knew reality was not the way people were telling me. And yeah, and when I saw Matrix and this kind of stuff, I knew that was the way.
Yeah.
And it's some things. I mean, that's the idea. I write some poetry sometimes, and I like it. But to find this poetry in life, it's like the aim of it. There's poetry all the time, everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like to see the beauty, it depends on how you look, not what you look, how you look.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? Whatever you, in the right state, everything has its beauty, right? Even
Absolutely.
Even things that are ugly or smell bad or whatever, they can be fascinating, you know.
That's Christ story, you know? It's with his disciples, and he's walking, and there's a dead dog. And that's a story Jodorowsky told in a conference, and the disciples are shocked, and that dog, and it stinks, etc. But the Christ look at them and he says, "Oh, but it has beautiful teeth."
Hmm.
There's some kind of some beautiful connection to he sees the beauty. Okay, that's the idea. But the Christ is maybe was a real character, but it's part of you. Some of the messages of Christ, I think, were to say, okay, no more avatars. Now you have your work is to find your inner God, your inner Christ. That's your work.
Wake up.
That's what you have to do. Yeah, wake up. Everybody has the same divine part inside. So you have to look for it. And that's what Gurdjieff said, for example. I mean, in many traditions, it's absolutely equivalent. I was amazed at how many connections I could make between classical Chinese Tai Chi and Tarot, for example. They have nothing to do with it. I mean, really a few changes that these people could meet, but there's many common truths between them.
Well, you know, there is some suggestion that the playing cards that came to Italy from Persia originated in China. So, you know, there may be, you know, the sort of contemporary theory that I've heard from people is that the trumps are European, but the playing card structure may have come from the East originally, you know.
Yeah. So. Probably there was some maybe we'll know one day.
Maybe.
Yeah, I'm not like I don't. That's absolutely personal. But I've been looking for some personal solutions all the time, and very practical ones. That's things that really are answering my questions. I was a why kid. All the time,
mm-hmm.
all the time, and never stopped. And it's, now I discovered that it's very good, and that it maintains me in some kind of permanent curiosity. Now I have these stories, you know, that the Jodorowsky renewed the Marseille with a guy named Camoin.
Mm-hmm.
He's a heir of a printing family of tarot for centuries, and. And the guy seems to say that the tarot was brought to Europe, Marseille, by Maria Magdalena.
Okay.
And she brought it from Palestine, from a little place nearby Marseille, and that's how tarot came. But I mean, for now, nobody really knows. It's lots of speculations and this kind of stuff, and it's very nice. It's a very nice legend. I like it. And
mm-hmm.
Also, another one saying that it was the meeting of wise men from all the book religions that decided to put some knowledge, some wisdom into a card game that gave birth to the tarot. Because in the Marseille, for example, you have traces of Judaism and Islam and Christianity together.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's interesting. It's good to see how all these connect. But like making it a separation, and it's. I mean, we have to see the structures and to see how they reproduce them. I've been working in England, and then it's the country. I would say the country of the Rider-Waite.
Uh-huh.
And I love Rider-Waite too. I have some. It's different symbols, so I don't really work with it. It's very interesting. I was in a place doing workshops in a place I loved, and very clean energetically. There was all Wiccans, and it's very interesting Wicca also. Mm-hmm. I mean, no tradition is has no interest.
Yeah,
it's very. I mean, we're here to unite the things. That was one of the... There's a movie, an American movie, I'm sure you saw it. It's The Man from Earth.
Okay. I'm not familiar with it off the top of my head.
It's a very good one. It's a very good one. You can find it in YouTube. It was never broadcasted largely because it's very revolutionary in the way what it says. And recently I saw... documentary in Spanish about the history of Christ, because in the Bible Christ disappears between when he's 12 and 30. Mm-hmm. What has he done at this time? I mean, there's lots of questions here, and lots of questions that really are embarrassing the Catholics, for example.
Right.
But he was somebody of he was there was some way of uniting Orient and Occident. There's a very strong. To me, it seems absolutely evident, but I have no proof of it. I'm working on my intuition on it.
Well, I mean, certainly, if your intuition tells you, then it must be true.
Somehow, that's my reality.
Exactly.
It's true.
Perhaps you can just substitute in your life story from the time you were 12 to the time you were 30. And then write the whole thing from there.
Absolutely, that's a projection. And as far as it's very interesting, because carrying the name of the Christ makes you somehow more connected to this, mm-hmm. without really connecting to the I'm elected. I'm somehow the one or some crazy shit like that. But there's a book very interesting on it. It's translated in English. It's written by a guy named Tom Berg. It's a book named Meditation on the 22 Arcanas. It's a very thick and very dense book. I'm very interested in what he says. And recently, I was doing a class on my favorite arcana, naturally the seven, the Chariot. Mm-hmm. And they say that the seven is the number of God, and when you connect yourself to God, you're crazy somehow. At a certain time, you can fall into madness because you think you're elected. You talk to God and you see God, etc.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the deal, you know. It's seeing your madness. That's the thing.
All the prophets went out in the desert or wherever they were, right, and went mad for a while and came back with things.
I was aware of this when I was years ago when I was looking at the Catholic saints, you know,
mm-hmm.
and seeing the Virgin, they're seeing the Christ, and they hear God talking to them. Oh yeah, if they incarnate themselves, they will go directly to lunatic asylum now, and they pull into medication, very hard ones to cut these hallucinations. I mean, if they incarnate themselves now, so if you're crazy, if you hear these voices, don't say it. Keep them for you. And if they say, I mean, to me, the madness is that you putting the others and yourself in danger. That's the madness. But yes. Everybody's crazy. Besides, apart from this, everybody's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And like not accepting your madness is like the craziest thing you can do.
Yes. Yes, yes, it is. I love it. Don't be crazy. Let your crazy out.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. And use it to create art or to create something. Or yeah, to use this energy, which is very strong, to create things. But because when we look at our society, it's absolutely crazy. Absolutely. Well, normal people are very, very dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that's kind of a big chunk of where the power of the psycho magic comes from, right? That
Absolutely.
Other part gets to force or push something out into the world, right? Or gets to act in the world.
That's the thing. We are managed. I mean, the master of the puppet is the unconscious mind, definitely. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
You have an accident with a person, you have something to do with this person. You're enacting, you're putting into reality some impulse inside you. The psychomagic is putting it into reality on a symbolical manner, with leaving it like that takes out some dramatic possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
The idea.
So, I mean, lots of people that I chat with are very interested in psychomagic. It seems to be, Hodorowsky's book and you know, it seems to be something that's kind of gaining interest these days.
Naturally, to my opinion, it's the psychoanalysis of the next two centuries.
Hmm. Well, where does somebody start? What do they do? Can we give people some psycho magic to go and do to start themselves on their road? Would that be too much to ask of our interview?
No, it's good. It's good. It depends on what you want to change. One of the psycho magic, but it's Jodorowsky that's saying it, is saying that we all have this Oedipus complex. We're projecting on our partner, whether it's a man, woman, whatever, our father, our mother, our grand, our elder brother, our elder sister, this kind of stuff. And he said that in order to live freely or more freely your life, you should release. That's the idea of psychomagic, is doing what your unconscious mind wants to do. Mm. Like releasing in the reality the impulse that may stay contained in your unconscious mind, but that may also express it into reality on very different ways. So it would be like if you're, for example, I'm a man and I'm heterosexual and I have a partner and I have to leave my Oedipus complex with my mom, for example. So I will take a picture of my mom and make a mask with it, you know, and put it on the face of my partner and have sex with my partner and do it as if I was having sex with my mom. And at a certain point, I will play like as if I was having an orgasm, because the unconscious mind accepts symbols, okay? Mm-hmm. So it's like exactly what you said about the kids. You can change, you can play, and you can, the more you are fluid with your imagination, the more it works. So at the moment you say you have an orgasm, you say and you say the name of your mom, and that's it. And then you take the mask off your partner and you put it in the toilet, you tear it in parts and you put it in the toilet, and that's it.
Done.
And maybe your partner also has, I mean, maybe, I'm sure your partner has also, no, I mean it's a mirror. I mean, the person you're with carries the same thing as you.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow. So,
well, I think just admitting that, like, just admitting that is powerful in and of itself. Hey,
absolutely.
all of my foibles, they probably have too. So let's let them out. Let's let them surface. Let's talk about them. And then we'll find ways to move them.
That's an idea. But the idea, for example, changing your name. Mm-hmm. Like American Indians, they used to change names. They have a name that's corresponds, that suits to the task they do for the tribe at the time. When they change task, they change name.
Mm.
We live, our name is a limited way to perceive reality. It's exactly like the light spectrum we perceive with our eye, except that the name is the way you perceive reality. My name is enable me to perceive some spectrum of reality. If I change name, I enlarge my spectrum.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And then people will say, yeah, but it's very difficult to change name, and how can I do that? Oh, you don't do it officially. I mean, you don't change your name on your passport, but you can like unite some friends, make a party, and give them like visiting cards, and with your new name, and you say, and you open a bottle of champagne, and when the top goes out and they pop, you say, from now on, call me with this name, and that's mm-hmm. it.
Well, it's like Prince did, right? Changed his name to a symbol, you know?
Absolutely.
And then changed it back, I gather, but you know.
Absolutely, or the rapper, what's the name of it? A Snoop Dogg, or he's changing name. I mean, it's exactly the same as like the writers taking some writing name and this kind of stuff. It's mm-hmm. a different person. You enlarge your perception of reality. It's very easy and very powerful. The story was very good in the Jewish tradition. They used to change the name of the person that was sick and about to die, for example, a very sick and person may die, and they change name.
Mm.
Or when the death comes and asks the person by the name, there's nobody.
Right.
So it has. I was thinking about it because I've been working with some person that has a cancer, and really there's the psychomagic, sometimes you can try. I don't say it cures cancer. Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, but you can try things because it's unconscious. The unconscious is really managing the energy. And the person, if for example, the cancer is sometimes and somehow realizing the death impulse you have inside you.
Right.
And then the act would be to die symbolically.
Mm-hmm.
You go and you make it theatrical, you know. You go and you dig your own grave, and then you read your what's the name of it in English? I don't remember.
Funeral
text, and to your false parents carrying a mask of the parents, and then you say, "Here lies," and that's your name, and the person dies of sickness and never realizes herself or it's himself, etc., etc. And you read all the dramatical things, and then you go in the grave, and you bury yourself, and you let just your face out of the grave, and you go in the grave with a blanket, and you take all the things you want to let behind you, objects, mm-hmm. symbols, and kind of stuff. And when you decide, you're in your grave and you're dead now. Okay. When you decide to go out and to live again, and then you go out of it, and your symbolical parents, they wash you with holy water, and you let your blanket in your with the objects in the grave, you fill it, and then you wash yourself with holy water with your false parents, welcoming you, mm-hmm. and you dress yourself with something with new clothes, and then you go out with your parents to party, and you give yourself a new name, for example. That would be some kind of action you can do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very theatrical. This one is very terrible. It's very, very hard because you need to do something like that to realize yourself, to release some kind of death impulse you may have. We all have, but some people have stronger than others. You know?
Well, I mean, and that's what masons and shamans and ceremonial Absolutely. People have been doing for centuries and millennia, Absolutely. Right? You know?
Absolutely. Now it's named psychomagic, but absolute takes roots in some real traditions, things that has been done for centuries. Absolutely. And psychomagic is a way to sell it to the rational, doubting people somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you say, "I'm going to see a shaman," a lot of people will laugh at you and say, "Oh, yeah."
Again, exactly.
So it's a way to make it work on the unconscious side, but you have very simple ones like for example, if you have something that's troubling your mind that makes you write it in the air. Then you erase it very thoughtfully in the air also, and then you take the rest and the rest of the energy in the air, and you throw it back to the center of the earth to burn there. And mm-hmm. then you write another positive thing in the air. And you change your mind like that, not for a long time, but for a few seconds, a few minutes, just to let you breathe somehow,
mm-hmm.
for example. And you have many. You can create your own. There's a Psychomagic Manual of Jodorowsky. I don't know if it's going to be translated in English or if it's translated in English. It will be one day. It exists in French and Spanish now, sure, in German too, and yeah, you have many acts, psychomagical acts Jodorowsky gave, but you can use it as a symbol dictionary and work it on yourself. Mm-hmm. You can make your psychomagical acts.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's the thing, right? If it Absolutely. Seems like a good idea, it probably is. You know?
Absolutely.
Like,
absolutely, and if lots of people feel like very interested, like it's like the unconscious mind is pushing here and saying, "Okay, do some symbolical work on yourself," and you have many possibilities, and you can. I mean, I've been working on myself like that for quite a long time, and I've been like testing things on me before giving them to people,
mm-hmm.
for example. That's something you can, anybody can do. You have an idea or an image of something you should do to change something in you, and you do it. And then you do it. And then if it works, you can share it with your friends and et cetera, et cetera. And then
you can write it down, and it can become the next Bible in 2,000 years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's something like that. It's something like that. I was sure that was the third thing that I was absolutely attracted to when I entered the Jodorowsky conference first time, was psychometry. That was something very, I didn't knew I would participate to the writing of the book.
Mm.
Because at this time I was his assistant, so I participated quite actively to the writing of the book. He wrote it, but I was like gathering the material and this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And also because I was, when he was reading tarot in the cafe down his house, I was writing lots of psychological acts there to use them afterwards and to share them with people. There's a blog, a Spanish blog named Plano Sin Fin, that is talking a lot about Jodorowskian thing, work and sentences and things.
But
it's absolutely, and then there's this these new possibilities of that's one of the other very interesting and very very nice and thing in Jodorowskian work is to enable you to work on yourself on your own.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to go to the shaman, the magician, or to the psychoanalyst. You can work on yourself in your house, and that also.
You can print out large the card of the Hierophant and make a mask and put it on yourself and off you
absolutely.
Go, right?
Absolutely. Or you can put on all your walls, all your arcanas, all the arcana you need. You can put it in your pocket, on in your bag, and make copies and put it in your office in front of you, etc., etc. I mean, in this book, Meditation on the 22 Arcanas, and that exists, sure, in French and English. It's very, very. They say at the moment, and it's evident that the tarot, the arcanas, are magic. They provoke some modification of your consciousness. So looking at the symbol makes a modification in your consciousness deeply.
Mm-hmm.
So naturally, you can put aside in your pocket or wherever you want it, or you can work with it. It's something practical, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There was some very interesting. The teaching of the tarot is mental, is intellectual on one side, but very very unconscious and has to be practical.
Yeah, well, it's always that sort of tension, right, between people wanting to know what the card means, and the fact that it means, it only ever means what it means in a specific context.
Absolutely. There's no limit to the tarot.
Mm-hmm.
No limit. You can say, yeah, it's absolutely an indication of the meaning of the card, of what I say to the people. But you can find yourself new meanings.
Mm-hmm.
And then also that's very, very, very interesting way to read tarot. I had the case that sometimes when you read tarot, you have a person in front of you and you don't see nothing. You can say nothing in the cards. I don't know. Some people are very, one, reluctant; two, they're of something.
Mm-hmm.
And you can ask the person to say what the person sees in the cards. Okay, you have three cards in front of you. What do you see in the cards? And then the person is opening herself or himself, and then you see what the problem is, and what the person is looking for, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
You project yourself inside the cards.
Definitely.
That's your way of seeing reality. Expressed through the cards. That's the magic of the tarot, enabling you to find a way to communicate on a more objective basis with people.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow.
Beautiful. So if people are looking to connect with you, where can they find you on the internet and places like that? Where might they like to hang out with you?
I have a Facebook. I have many Facebook pages. Too many. I have some Facebook pages where I publish information on my work, which is at the moment a lot in Spanish. before I live in Spanish speaking country and region. But I was participating to some event in London too, so I was thinking about going to California too one day, and I met some people in here that are connected in Miami, so I may go to English speaking countries too. Mm-hmm. And Facebook is a good way, and also ask through Facebook mailbox about. I work a lot on Skype, for example.
Perfect. Great. Well, I'll make sure I include a link in the notes for the show, as well as to some of the books and things that we've been talking about as well.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Andrew, for this interview. Very interesting. And if I go to Canada, I sure will go to the Hermit Lamp and to meet you. Yeah.
Excellent. All right.
So I want to thank you for listening to this. And I have a question. I was looking at the numbers the other day, and it seems that like 600 or 700 people are listening to the episodes of this podcast, which is amazing. So first of all, thanks. And secondly, that's a lot of people. What might we collectively do with this? Would people be interested in having a group to discuss this material? Would people be interested in, doing something that would allow it to go to a deeper level, perhaps have a bit more interactiveness with myself and those of my guests who are excited about that possibility? What would be useful? Because, me and the people I've been having on here being a one-way broadcasting thing is certainly fun, and I really enjoy it, and I appreciate people paying attention to it. But I'm wondering what we might do to even deepen this. So do me a favor, wherever you're connecting to me, website, Facebook, by email, drop me a line. Tell me what you would be interested in, and do your best to think about what you would genuinely, given your time, energy, and attention, have some space for. All right. Thanks again for listening. I will talk to you soon. And if you need my email, it's easy. It's Andrew@thehermitslamp.com. Talk to you soon.